0. The following tape is a recording of Mrs. Merle Adams, who is the guest speaker tonight, August 17th, at the Santa Clarita Valley Historical Society meeting being held in Placerita Junior High School.
However, I will say that it was quite a few years ago, my sister called me. My sister at that time was in charge of a community house in Montecito, a suburb of Santa Barbara. And she wanted me to meet a new assistant that she had. And so I dashed out to meet her. I was impressed, particularly by the fact that she could beat me at badminton every time. I thought I was pretty good, but she was better. Our speaker tonight has had a most interesting career, but the thing that interests us especially is that she has a long history in at least an extension of the Santa Clarita Valley. When I moved up here, which is about 25 years ago, I envied those people who had been here so many more years and who had a knowledge of how this area had grown, how it had developed, the people who had lived in it and what they had done. Our speaker tonight has had that opportunity. She came here with her parents to Acton when she was about 9 years old, I think, and grew up there. Those of us here in this part of the valley, you know, we wonder about Acton. We know it's there, but we don't know about its history. And tonight, she is going to tell us about it. As I introduce her, I would like to introduce another old friend that I met tonight after a lapse of 17 years, Alberta Bell. She and her husband were old-timers in this country. Alberta was born in this area, and she and her husband for a long time had a business on Sierra Highway, when Sierra Highway was quite a business street. Alberta, will you stand up? And then I would like to introduce the speaker tonight, an old and dear friend, Merle Adams.
Do you mind if I don't use the microphone? Can you hear me? All right.
No, I might. Come on, use it. I had to.
What?
I had to. You use it.
Well, I'd just soon not.
Okay.
But if you'd rather, I will. Whatever. In 1919, my mother and dad took me in our Maxwell, our 1916 Maxwell, to Kansas. We were gone for 2 months. We spent one whole month on the road going and coming. And my father got back there and saw all his brothers and all his relatives farming. So he thought, well, I'm going to be a farmer. And he came back. He was a mechanic in Los Angeles. And we came out here to Acton for a few years, a few times. Is that better? We came out here to Acton a few times, and I was real excited. I thought, oh boy, living in the country, that's really going to be something. So I began to wonder, when are we going? When are we going? And my mother and father didn't seem to know. And so a friend of mine down the street had one of these Ouija boards. You remember the Ouija boards? So I used to go down visiting and the friend, and I'd say, come on, let's work the Ouija board. And of course, I always wanted to know, when are we going to move to Acton? Well, the Ouija board, I got so I really had more faith in it than I did in my mother and father, because they weren't telling me a thing, but the Ouija board, it could certainly make me get excited. Finally, we moved. We came here in 1919, and the last day of the year, well, now I think I know why we came at that time. Christmas vacation, so Merle must go to school then right after New Year's. So our trip was to Acton to go to school, and we got to school before the teacher did. There was a young boy there, and he was fixing the fire, and the stovepipe went up like this and across. Excuse me. It was about to fall down, so my father helped fix it. Well, you know, that was the first fixing my father did in Acton, and for 47 years he fixed in Acton. He was a fixer, and windmills and most everything that came along. Well, go get Ed Adams, he'll do it for you. So pretty soon there was a wagon came up the street, some children in it, and the teacher was with them. So the teacher came in, and she met my mother and my dad. My dad was trying to be very pleasant. He said, my, the mountains are certainly beautiful. And the teacher said, yeah, those same old mountains, they stay right there. And my mother thought, my goodness sakes. And then she turned to my mother and she said, why'd you take your daughter out of the fine city schools and bring her up to this horrible place to go to school? And my mother had already had misgivings, and this didn't help matters much. Well, we got through the first day of school, and then I was going to walk home, and who met me? My mother and father. They wouldn't let me walk home, and I wanted to walk home. I soon got over that, but I did want to walk home. For about a year, I wanted to do the walking. After that, I'd take a ride with anybody that came along. It just didn't make any difference who. Now tonight, as I talk, I want to focus on the post office. And I want to focus on people who were in the post office. Not that I knew them when they were in, but I do want to focus on them. For instance, Mr. R.E. Nickel, he was the first postmaster in Acton. And I found out that Mr. Nickel, he was a pretty fine man. And he did more things than just the post office. Because you see, he was in the post office back in 1888 when it first started. And the way that I knew him, the way I became conscious of him, he decided to build some new houses. Those three white houses across from the Taylor Land Company, which was the old Newton place, Mr. Nichols built those houses. And my grandfather was one of the carpenters that worked on those houses. Mr. Nichols worked in one. Just last week I found out that Mr. Nichols had been notary public. The way I found that out, I found that my first application for a driver's license, dated 1927, and signed by my mother and my father, as well as myself, and Mr. Nichols, notary public. Then, after we got out of elementary school, we had to go over to Lancaster, to high school. And you know, that was a new experience for us, going from a small country school into this enormous, large high school of 400 students. Seemed like a lot. And it was a thrill to me. It was a thrill to everyone, I thought. But my feeling was I wanted to share that back home at Acton. I wanted to share it. So we had programs in the high school. And wouldn't it be fun to have programs at Acton? So I decided that we decided that we would have a club. So we called our club the Lively Go-Getters. And our object was to have a program once a week. I mean once a month, and invite everybody to come. We invited the ladies to bring cakes. They always brought cakes. And cookies, and they always brought cookies. And we had this program. Well, it was a home talent type of thing. We asked everybody who could do anything to be on the program. Mr. Nickel was a fine gentleman at reading poems or essays, something of that sort. And he prided himself on doing it. He liked to do it. So we always invited him to do it. Well, this took place somewhere along in 1927 and 28. And one night at our program, he was going to give a reading. And he gave the reading. And he did so well. And everybody clapped. And he walked to the back of the room. And he collapsed. And he died. Well, you can imagine that was quite a shock to those of us who were members of the club. We felt a little bit responsible. I remember the next day I went to see his wife, Mrs. Nickel, and I told her how sorry I was. And she said, "Oh, don't be sorry. Yesterday was one of the happiest days of his life." So you see, she realized how happy he was, and we really didn't have to be sorry that we had asked him to be on the program. Now that happened in 1927 or 28, I think. Another postmaster was Mrs. Newton, Mrs. Lydia C. Newton. Now when I was in the elementary grades, I knew her as the mother of two of my best friends. Edith and I were graduated together from the eighth grade. Joyce was a little younger, but later on Joyce and I were roommates in college. And so over the years I knew Mrs. Newton, and Mrs. Newton was the postmaster when we first came to Acton. She was the postmaster up until 1922. In the little two-story house, which is now the Taylor Land Office, which became a one-story house after the earthquake. And then later on, Mrs. Newton did a real fine thing. And I'm not going to tell you that right now. Wait till we get to it, what she really did. But she was my friend for many, many years. And she did know quite a bit about history. She went back to the 1938 school, the present-day school, for a whole week in 1951. So that she could say that she had been to all four schools which were in the Acton area. And she did. And they took her picture and put it in the Times and the Antelope Valley Press. Then after Mrs. Newton gave up the post office in 1922, Mr. Hash, J.J. Hash, took over the post office. He was the 12th postmaster. And he was, at the time we went there, he was a member of the school board. He had served in that capacity for 10 years. Now, Mr. Hash was pretty good. He was a friend to many, many people. He was a generous man. He always brought ice cream to the 4th of July picnic. And I guess that's what we kids remembered him for the most. Although, whenever we wanted to use the school for anything, we'd go see Captain Hash and ask him for permission, and he would give it, and we would go ahead, put our posters up, and go to the school and have our program. So he was always interested in us. And I think my father served one time with him on the school board. I think that was the year my father ran for the school board, and there were no other candidates running. And there were 7 votes cast, and my dad got all of them. So I thought he did pretty well in his political career. Mr. Hash died after I went away. He died during 1934, and I was away during that time. But he gave a great deal of his time and energies to Acton. And I have some pictures here and all that people may look at afterwards about these people. I went away to school in 1929 to Santa Barbara, and from then until 1947, 48, I was away in Santa Barbara for 10 years, and in Texas for 4, and in Minnesota for 3, and don't add that up under the new math rules, or it probably won't come out right. But anyhow, I was away during that period of time. And then I came back after my father passed away. I came back in 1948, and I fully expected to take a year off and have a relaxing time and decide what we should do, because I didn't feel I could leave my mother up there alone. And so I thought, well, I'll decide what to do. I'll stay home a year. Well, somebody asked me to work part-time in the post office, and I thought, wouldn't that be fun? I believe I will. So I worked part-time in the post office. And then in 1949, I became the postmaster. And I served in that capacity from 1949 till 1955. And now I can really tell you some of the inside dope about the post office. When I took over, I bought from my predecessor all of the post office boxes. You know, those things that they put your mail in? Those boxes that were in the post office. I bought them. That's what you're supposed to do. I did it. I bought them. Well, you know what happened? I had them. I rented them. I collected the rent. And you know who got it? The post office department got it. But I own the boxes. Now that's a fact. Don't ever let Mr. Baylor know that nowadays, because you know he might think that's a pretty good idea and way to, you know, make money for the post office. So don't let Mr. Baylor in on this, because we must keep this from him if we possibly can. At any rate, that was all right. So then I decided that I became rather interested in Acton and other Actons. And I looked up in the postal thing, and I found there were 4 Actons in the United States, 1 Acton in Canada, Ontario, Canada, and 1 Acton in England. So I proceeded to write letters to all of the Actons, and I received replies from all Acton, Ontario, and from all Acton, Montana, Acton, Maine, Acton, Indiana, and Acton, Massachusetts. Now that postmaster, I don't know about him. He didn't even sign his name. He just wrote in the side of my letter, you know, questions that I'd ask. He just scribbled a few little things down, and in reply, he didn't even use another piece of paper. He used the stamped envelope I sent him, but he didn't use another piece of paper. Now, Acton, Maine, Acton, Indiana, and Acton, Montana all had very clear postmarks. Acton, Massachusetts, you can't even tell it's Acton, Massachusetts. And I thought, my goodness, what's the matter with that man? Of course, he's got a bigger office than the rest of us had, but still, you know, I thought he should at least have been a little bit more courteous about it, but he wasn't. I got it all here if you want to see those letters. I got them here. But at any rate, that was one of the things that I did while I was in there. And then one day, I got a letter, and it was addressed to His Honor the Mayor or other chief civic authority, Acton, California. And the return address was from Acton, England. So I thought, my goodness, we don't have a mayor. who is the chief civic authority. You know, if Captain Hash had still been alive, I believe I probably would have turned it over to him. But he wasn't there, so I thought, I left it on the shelf for 3 days. I couldn't decide what to do. And then I thought, well, now this is ridiculous. I don't want to return it. I can at least open it and read it and reseal it and send it back to him if there's anything I can do about it. So I did. I opened the letter. Well, it was from this man, a Mr. and Mrs. Sidney Neville in Acton, England. They had received from some relatives in Los Angeles the Examiner newspaper with a travelogue on it showing that, you know, these little trips they used to take out, well, the one up through Acton. So Acton was there. Well, the English are very interested in history. So they thought, we must find out about this Acton in California. Then naturally they knew about the one in Massachusetts, but they didn't know there was one in California. So that was the reason they wrote the letter. So that was the one question that they asked was, there were several questions, but the one they asked was, how did Acton get its name? So I thought, well, I guess I'll try and find out, and I think I'll try and answer this letter. So I asked Mrs. Newton. She came to Acton in 1885, and I thought, well, I think I'll just ask her. She knows how Acton got its name. So I asked her. I knew she was quite interested in, she'd been back to school for a whole week to, you know, so she could say she'd gone to four schools. That was an indication of the type of lady she is. She was always trying to find out things. So I thought, well, I'll just ask her. And I asked her, and she said, why, yes, she knew how it got its name. She said, back in 1876, when the railroad was put through Acton, she said, Acton was named by a railroad engineer who came through here. And nobody knew his name, but he's the one that gave it gave Acton its name. So I thought, well, that sounds pretty fine to me. And so that's what I wrote back to Acton, England, and answered some of the other questions. I have all the letters, everything here for anybody who's interested in looking at them. So I sent that off to them. And at that time, I did not know the existence of, maybe I did know the existence of the rooster, the Acton rooster, which many of you people, especially you in the library, know about the Acton Rooster newspaper that was published by R.E. Nickel. I heard it was in the Newhall Library, right?
In the new, 1900 to 1913.
Yes, and I have a copy here too. But I found in one of those copies, a 1906 copy, where it said something about names of Alpine Springs and Acton, who was taking on the appearance of its namesake Acton, Massachusetts. And I thought, my goodness. And that postmaster didn't even write me an answer to the letter and the questions. And they think that this Acton is just like that one back in Massachusetts. I think I prefer to tell that man in England that we were named after the Acton in England, not the one in Massachusetts. I mean, after all, what difference does it make? The Acton in England, we know, came first. We had to come from them some way. And so I didn't feel too badly about writing that, and I was glad Mrs. Newton told me that. I thought it was a nice little story. So I sent him now that information. We had quite an exchange of correspondence. And pretty soon, right out of a clear blue sky, he said, have you ever thought of visiting in England? Why don't you come and stay with us? Come and go as you like. Stay as long as you like. And why don't you come this summer? So I thought, well, why don't I? So I did. And it was very exciting getting ready for that trip. It's all here in this book. And so I
long before I left, however, my goodness sakes, I got a letter from the Acton Anglo-American Association in Acton, England, in which they said, "We see by the newspaper that you are going to visit in Acton, England. Will you speak to our group?" The Acton Boat Works, they said, they wrote a letter to this Mr. Neville in England, and they said, "We see by the paper Miss Adams is going to visit. We want her to come and go through our Acton Boat Works and have lunch." So this was all even before I ever arrived, all those invitations. Well, so things progressed, and I went to Acton, England. And one of the things that impresses me the most is the fact that the mayor of Acton, England, had a telegram waiting for me when I got there. And I think people ought to would enjoy hearing it. This is addressed to me in Acton, England. "Warm and sincere welcome to England's Acton. May your visit do much to stimulate your interest between our respective towns, besides increasing your own circle of friendship. Arthur Parks, Mayor." Now, I still have a friend there that I keep in touch with, the one who was the editor of the Acton Gazette newspaper. She and her staff were just wonderful to me. In fact, they met me at the airport with this great big plaque saying, "Acton, England welcomes Acton, California." And they told me afterwards that the rest of the crowd waiting to saw their sign, and they said, "What's coming, a hockey team?" And of course, I wasn't a hockey team, but anyhow, it was very exciting. And I was interviewed by several of the London papers. In fact, one London reporter just went wild. He said, "And the wagon wheels are trundling down the dusty road, and the sand is flying in the sky, and the sun is shining. Oh, you think that's California? Well, it is. It's Acton, California." And that was the way he wrote his article. So he really had a good time, I guess, writing that up. I think I know what it means. I do that once in a while myself. But at any rate, I spoke to the Acton Anglo-American Association. I showed them movies that I had taken of our own Acton. There again, I wanted to share our Acton with their Acton. I had the Bloom Ranch, I had the Scanlon Ranch, I had the chickens from the Scanlons and the apples from the Blooms and the lilacs from Mr. Brevidora's. And then I also had wildflowers. The spring of 1952, the wildflowers were wonderful. Those movies are just as good today as they were then. Their colors are just beautiful. And those were what I showed to them. It's strange, after that meeting was the only time that I felt any division, like a caste system of royalty here and you know, the rest of us somewhere else. But at any rate, I did feel that a little bit. I had anticipating answering questions and talking to these people. And I got a couple of questions. One of the questions that was asked was, "What about those chickens?" You see, they were still rationed back in 1952. So they said, "What about those chickens? Do they lay eggs?" They were rationed on eggs. And I said, "Oh no, those chickens are for fryers." And so the story came out that the chickens that were seen in my movies were for the capital FRIARS. How was I to know? They misunderstood what I had said. But at any rate, they put a stop to those questions immediately and I had to go into the mayor's parlor for a reception. And I left the rest of the members out in the other room. Well, you know, I wanted to be out in the other room, and I wanted to be talking to the rest of the members, but I didn't misbehave and run right out. I did let them herd me where I was supposed to go. But that was the only time that I had any feeling whatsoever of that sort of thing. When I went to the Acton Bolt Works, now that was really something. They showed me all the workings, and I didn't understand a thing, but the pictures they took, it looks like I did, you know. So anyhow, I saw the bolts. And then I had lunch with seven men on the staff, and it was wonderful. We just had a fine time. And during that time, Mr. Parker, he's the little one with the goatee, he's the manager of the place, he said, "We want to do something for you while you are here. We want to give you an all-day trip to Oxford." So it was all arranged. Correspondence, I never saw. I got more letters while I was in England than I ever do get here at home. And just, you know, they have four deliveries a day. I don't know about now, but they did then. And I went with Mr. and Mrs. Sharp for an all-day trip. It was wonderful. Then before I leave the country, I get a letter from the mayor saying, wishing me a happy journey home. They are so glad that I was visiting. I went to, I got a letter from the Acton Bolt Works saying they were glad I'd been there, wishing me a happy journey home. And I got more mail after I got home from both the mayor and the Acton Bolt Works. They were just simply wonderful. Then I went to the Acton Gazette staff. They were really nice to me. There were four young men on there, and one was a photographer, and the rest were reporters. And they just took me all around everywhere, up the bell tower of the church and all different places. And they took me to a prefab home, and that was really nice. There was a housing worker there, a government worker, I guess, and the lady of the house, the man of the house, and two little girls. Now, this was a Friday. The man stayed home from work. The children stayed home from school. I never thought I'd ever do that to anybody, but I wasn't responsible, but there they were. And I was quite overcome. I got a letter from her the day after I'd been there and we'd had tea, thanking me for coming. Now, how about that? And the children, I sent them, after I got home, I sent them pictures that the Acton set gave me extra pictures, and I sent them to their mother. She wrote me a nice letter. She said she had them framed and they were hanging up on the wall. Oh, no, not really. But that's what happened. That's just part of it. And so, actually, I had the feeling that I was representing, in a foreign country, a town that I love very much, and a town that I have always felt I wanted to share good things with this town. And I'm talking about this little Acton, California, right up the road. I've always been proud to come home to Acton. I've always been pleased to come home to Acton. And I don't have to ask the Ouija board now when to go there either. But, you know, I got home, I put my movies together, and I shared that back home with our Acton people. We had 300 who came to see those movies. Then I must confess something to you. They were just as anxious to see our own local Acton movies as they were the ones from England. But it was a pleasure to show both of them to them. I showed them in Palmdale. I showed them in Santa Barbara. And I shared them with my friends. You know something? I'm awful glad that Mrs. Newton told me how Acton got its name. I've always been very grateful to her for that. Well, it wasn't, let's see, that was in 1952. So I was writing for the newspaper over in the Valley Press. And, you know, the post office is a good place to pick up news. So you just pick it up right and left. Without even, you know, reading the postcards. You don't really have to read the postcards to get it. But you can if you do it, get desperate if you're a postmaster. But at any rate, it was a pleasure to be in the post office. And then while I was there, I was busy. I was remodeling my mother's house. And in fact, I got more done there when I worked 7 days a week than I did after I decided to teach and worked 5 days a week. So I, along about 1955, I thought, my goodness sakes, what am I doing here behind these bars? I don't know whether you're, that post office had a little window like this and it had bars like that, you know? And literally, I was behind the bars there. And so I thought, well, maybe I shouldn't stay here any longer. Actually, I did train for other things, and maybe I really should be doing it. I had just kind of fallen into the path of least resistance, which turned out to be the post office. But I found out you had to have an awful lot of resistance to get in, to get out of the post office. The first thing that happened was when I decided I was going to resign, 3 months' notice. The acknowledgement that I got for my resignation was, "Your resignation has been received. Please refer to section so-and-so, article such-and-such, paragraph so-and-so, the chapter on so-and-so, and you will find that if you leave your office before a replacement comes, you will be dishonorably discharged for abandonment of office." Now, that was my acknowledgement. And I thought, well, I've kept out of trouble all these years, and now maybe I'm about to get into some bad trouble. So I, you know, I'd look forward to those last few weeks with the people I love that came into the post office. I liked the people. We got along fine. And I enjoyed the association, and I thought, I want to have some fun with them. But here, hanging over my head, was that I was maybe getting ready to abandon my office, and goodness only knows what was going to happen to me. So I went on. The day before, and we had a replacement, so they had no excuse. I got a phone call from Pasadena, and the inspector said, "Well, I hear you want to get out of the post office." We had had telegrams to the Washington, D.C., telegrams to San Francisco, telegrams to our congressman, everything, trying to get this thing set up. And I said, "Well, yes." So he said, "All right, I'll be up in the morning." So he came up. Well, you know, they have to inspect, and they have to count the postage, count the money, and, you know, see that you're honest and everything's all okay. So he came up and he said, "You're 33 cents short." And I said, "Well, will you take 33 cents and let me out of here?" And he said, "Yes." So for 33 cents, I got out. And my successor took over. Well, you may think I was through with the post office, but I wasn't. I had made up my mind I would not sell the post office boxes to my successor, that was not right, and that there was time a stop should be put to that, and I was going to teach them back there in Washington that they couldn't get by with that sort of thing. So I was going to make them buy it from me, you see. Well, so I sent my request to be reimbursed. I bought some new boxes too. In the meantime, I think they owed me $369 that I paid. But they'd been getting the rent all these many, many years, and they didn't own the boxes. They weren't out of sand, but it was clear profit. No wonder the post office is in such bad shape now. But at any rate, clear profit in those days. And so I was going to just put a stop to that. So I wrote and I sent them a bill for $369. And of course, the reply I got said, "Take your boxes and go home and play post office." I mean, that was just about the gist of it. So I thought, well, this won't do. So I got in touch with my congressman, Congressman Edgar Heastan. So he got on the ball, and he really had to work at it. And Mr. Luckland, who was president of the Rotary Club there in Acton, he got on the ball, and they worked at it. Well, in about 6 months' time, I got, guess what I got? $150 out of those boxes. That's all they felt they could allow for such cheap boxes and secondhand boxes. But at the same time, my successor did not have to buy the boxes, nor do they have to buy them now. And I don't know whether that was the beginning of doing away with that section of the postal laws and regulations or not, but at least I felt pretty good about it. Of course, I always feel like the government got a pretty good deal out of those of us who who paid for the boxes, and they got the rent. In fact, I was paying rent on one of those boxes myself. Yeah, it was my box, but I paid the rent to the post office department. And I don't know that I got any more mail because of that arrangement either, but at least that's what I did. So my days in the post office were happy ones, and then I went into teaching. But I want to say that it's been a privilege to me to have known R.E. Nichols the first. Oh, I must tell you this. Soon after I got into the post office as postmaster, they sent me a notice from St. Louis, Missouri. That was one of the big headquarters for the post office department, and they said, all of the old records of your post office must be sent here to this center. Well, here was this box, couple boxes of the old cash books and all the rest of it, clear from the Ravenna post office and the Acton post office. And of course, I had never even looked at them. I had no occasion to, but I kept them there because they were came with the post office. I didn't have to pay for them either, but I mean, they were there, you know. And so I thought, well, now that's pretty bad. We send these records away, and what do we know about the past? We don't know a thing, as far as post office is concerned. So it took me quite some time, but I took out all of those cash books and arranged them in order of dates. And I dug out the list of all the postmasters at Acton, and that was when I found out that Mr. R.E. Nichols, whom I had known, was the first postmaster. And then I have all the other postmasters in order, and our present postmaster has a copy of that. I've got the original copy that I'd scribbled out on my worksheet as I did it. But I had the feeling this I must do for Acton, because it does preserve something that you'd never get back from the post office, any of that information. And so I was always glad that I had done that little item. At the present, I'm happily retired at Acton, and happy to talk to anyone who wishes to. I don't say I'm an authority on anything, but I must say I do have happy memories of Acton, and I wish we had a historical society up there, as you people have down here. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful thing that you are interested in preserving the past, because once the past is gone, unless you have it preserved somehow, it's never can quite be recovered unless you make it up. And that's what some people do try to do, but I don't think that's quite the way to do it. So I thank you for having me come, and as I say, you're perfectly welcome to look at some of these things that I do have, or come and see me, and be glad to see any of you at any time. Thank you.
Merle, we all thank you so much. I have two suggestions to make to President Carter. One is that he sent Merle back to England to represent our kind of United States, and two, that he put her in charge of the post office department. Merle, one of the things that's been traditional in this society ever since its beginning is that we do have meetings, we have great speakers such as yourself, but then after that's all over, the best part of the meeting sometimes is when we can all sit and visit.
That's right. That's good.
And now is the time for that. Do you have more?
Yes.
Oh, I turn it back to you then.
Okay.
But please, everyone, I had the advantage on a lot of you in that Betty and I had dinner with Merle and Alberta, so we've had a while to visit. Do stay afterward and visit with her. You'll find it rewarding.
Well, we have a little gift for you for sharing all your experiences with us.
Oh, for goodness sakes. For me?
Yes, for you.
Oh, my goodness.
It may be a surprise until you open it.
Oh, my goodness sakes.
We think they're great.
Oh, for goodness sakes. Isn't that something? Oh, my goodness sakes. Isn't that something? Oh, boy. Oh, isn't that wonderful? You know, I knew the operator at Lang for so many, many years. They're very close friends of mine.
Oh, that's great.
William Johnson and his wife and his two daughters and their son. They were all close friends of mine. Lang Station, 1876, 1970. Isn't that wonderful?
We
I just thank you
care.
So much.
Thank you.
Oh, my. That's just wonderful.
One question. Can you tell us what Mrs. Newton did after the earthquake?
Well, can't hear you, Irene.
She was going to tell us something about what Mrs. Newton did after the earthquake. You said you were going to tell us about that later.
Something about after the earthquake.
Mrs.
What about the earthquake? Earthquake.
Mrs. Newton said something or did something, and you were
going to
tell us.
Oh, Mrs. Newton? Oh, well, what she did. Oh, yeah. Well, you see, she told me where Acton, how Acton got its name. See, that was after, that's what I was going to say about Mrs. Newton. Yeah.
Thank you.
But, yes. Yes, that's what I was going to say about her.
Thank you, Richard.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Thank you again.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Give her another big hand. She had brought back some memories for me, too. You know, I used to fix stoves when I went to country school in Iowa. I used to start the fire. I was about the sixth grade, I think. So one day I thought a shotgun shell would be great to drop in there, you know, and I did. The next day we got a new stove. And I must say that you were almost the first ones to hear it. I never told anyone.
It's on tape now.
Now we have a couple of announcements from Mimi.
I didn't quite make it for the meeting.
Okay.
We wanted to let you know what the next meeting is going to be. We'll have it in the newsletter, but reserve the 21st of September. And we won't be here as we usually are. We'll be at the Valencia Library Multipurpose Room. And if you recall, last year in September when we had the Lang Station event, we had the library take a videotape. It's a new thing with the library system, and we got to use it right off the top. And so the library is going to show that videotape of the celebration at Lang. And Chuck Yee, who was out there at Lang and very active last year, is bringing up the film that he and the Chinese Historical Society took. They're both great, and so it'll be fun a year later to see what we accomplished last year and the fun it was. Then we have in October, it was in the newsletter this time, we're going to have a Halloween party, and I don't know if we've definitely said whether we're going to have a meeting that month or not. I think we decided we weren't, but you may get a different word. And then in November, of course, October is the big Mentryville celebration on October 8th, which is a Saturday. And everybody write that on your calendar to save it. Then in November, a little bit after, we wish we could have had it before, we're going to learn how Betty Pember and her various cohorts in this historic preservation operate through Mr. Tom Sitton, who works at the Museum of Natural History, the old museum in Exposition Park. He's coming up to our November meeting and tell us the various steps to get four different kind of preservation recognition that we are trying to get ourselves into. You know, this Mentryville that we and the Women's Club are doing jointly will be our really first achievement on our own of having something preserved for the future, and the town of Mentryville is it. So that's the way it's going to be. And one thing current, I've brought more of Mr. Perkins' booklets on the story of Rancho San Francisco. We had them last week. Ted Lamkin had given them to Ruth Newhall, as you may recall. And in addition to other very interesting things, there's some Acton history in it. I was going through them again. They're wonderful little booklets. We are selling them, giving Ted Lamkin is handling this, as he used to help Mr. Perkins with all of his different shows. But we're keeping 50 cents on each copy, and they're selling for $2. I have some here tonight. I think that's all. Okay.
Thank you, Mimi. And is there any other announcements?
May I have a moment, please? Mimi opened the door on Mentryville. That's all I needed. I wanted to thank the people that signed up to store lemonade, but our treasurer went out, purchased it, and put it in her own freezer. So we have many, many cans of frozen lemonade. Now what we need, people to be on the refreshment committee for the day at Mentryville. We need plastic jugs, the large ones, so we can make up the lemonade before we go up there. I think it'd be easier. And if people will collect some of the lemonade and put them in a big plastic jug, they come with orange juice, milk, water, whatever, and they're free as you buy them. Also, we will need much, much ice. Now, if any of you people have ice makers in your refrigerator, or you want to start making some and storing some, we certainly, it would save us a lot of money in the long run if you really want to do this. And I have all these lists. If you will please sign what you are interested in, and that will make it a lot easier. Don't forget cookies. Are we having cookies? Mm-hmm. Okay. That's one more list. Another thing, if the ladies or gentlemen wish to wear costumes, we think it would be very nice. You have a few weeks, months or two left to make your costumes. So it adds a lot of atmosphere. I think it would be very nice. So if you will please see me and say what you will do for our Mentryville celebration. I think we finally have it really going now. It will be the 8th.
Thank you.
October, Martin. Betty? Yeah, I didn't decide what time you're saying. Carol?
Yeah.
You want it 10 in the morning?
10 o'clock.
Yes, we had decided one, and they decided that
10
in the morning.
10 o'clock.
No, thank you.
Okay, it sounds like a lot of fun. Everybody be there. So if there's no other announcements, why, we'll join Art in the cookies and, oh.
Mrs. White going to say something about the bus trip to Fort Hay Long?
We are planning another bus trip. It'll be our last one for this year. And we changed the date on it since our board meeting. And what I understand now, Jerry Reynolds has looked into this and got the facts straight. They're holding their last Civil War battle up there in full costume regalia, blues and grays, on the 20th of November. So that puts it a little bit close to Thanksgiving, that sort of thing, but we figured that that isn't going to hamper people, and we're going to do it on a Sunday. There are some people who can take bus trips on Sunday better than on Saturday. So that's the aim, and if you can see your way to go, mark it on the calendar so you won't forget the 20th of November. Thank you, Julie.
Okay, any more announcements? Let's eat. The meeting is now adjourned.
It'll be $5 again.
Oh,